Yes, welcome back. It's now 8:15 here on Sabah al-Muslim. You're listening to Radio Islam International. It's time for the Big Picture program with A.B. Dawji. And with me on the line, I do have Uncle A.B. from KwaZulu-Natal. Uncle A.B., assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
How are you keeping this week?
Everything is wonderful, alhamdulillah. Durban is always good. A bit cold today.
Yeah, in Johannesburg as well. In this past 2 days, it's been a bit of been quite chilly.
Right.
The story that caught your eye this week.
Well, as usual, we start off with the bizarre, the crazy, the sometimes funny story that made it into the mainstream media. Now, Maulana, when you are traveling in Europe, the biggest problem is finding halal food.
Right.
Yes, of course, there are many Indian restaurants here and there, scattered all over, Middle Eastern fast food places. Doner Kebab is called, is the famous one. And most of them are quite dubious, very dubious indeed. But if you go to Switzerland, if you go to Switzerland and want a nice, juicy burger, your problems are over. I came across an article yesterday which reported that a new product has gone onto the market. And I'm sure Muslims will love it.
Gee.
It's halal. Let me read to you from this article. It says, Swiss shoppers will soon be able to buy burgers made from insects. After the country changed its food safety laws. The laws were changed in May to allow for the sale of food items containing three types of insects. That is crickets, grasshoppers, and mealworms, which are the larval form of the mealworm beetle, the larva. The burgers made by Swiss company called Essento are made from mealworms and also contain rice and vegetables such as turnip, celery, and leeks, as well as oregano and chili. Well, there you are. And the company also makes something like kebabs called insect balls, which combine the mealworms with chickpeas, onions, garlic, and spices. My mouth is really watering here. The sale of the burgers follows growing trend among the world for around the world for edible insects. The production of the insect products was initially postponed because no approved imports were available. They will now be sold in 7 branches of a major Swiss supermarket chain from August 21st. And Essento's co-founder Christian Bartisch, he said, insects have a culinary potential. Their production saves resources and their nutritional profile is high quality. Therefore, insects are the perfect complement to a modern diet. Now, according to Swiss law, the insects must be bred under strict supervision for 4 generations before deemed suitable for sale. Therefore, local production will take a few months to get started. Moreover, imports are under strict conditions and the insects must be raised in accordance with Swiss requirements at a company submitted to inspections by national food safety authorities. Good heavens, I'm going to ask Sanha to get involved in this, Maulana. And I know what you are all thinking, after reading that, I know what you are all thinking. When is the first store selling insect larva burgers going to open in Forsberg, eh? Sure. I can just imagine what a long queue there will be there. But here in South Africa, they will have to change the recipe slightly.
Gee.
Put some dhania and pudina and dana jeera and in the insect kebabs. Ish, as I said, it's all so mouth-watering, eh? Mouth-watering. Now,
gee.
And now just a quick observation on what's happening on the local scene, local political scene. And if you want to make sense of it all, then once again, I urge you to read George Orwell's Animal Farm.
Black
is white, right is wrong, and some animals are more equal than others. Wonderful stuff. Now, Makosi is really causing it in the party. Of course, I'm referring to Makosi Koza.
She
is regarded as a party pooper. She has just been removed as the chairperson of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. What was her crime? Well, she's got a big mouth. That's right. She speaks the truth, and some people don't like the truth. She said that Zuma must go, And she said openly that in the secret voting, in the no confidence motion, she will vote against Zuma, which she did. She's against corruption and said that the ANC has lost its way. Wow. Sure. That is so unacceptable, eh? So unacceptable.
True.
And so the big wigs of the party, they fired her as chairperson because, as the ANC press statement said, because of a breakdown of trust between her and ANC members in the committee. Breakdown in trust? Aibo. Most South Africans will trust her much more than some of the characters sitting there in parliament. What's the meaning of breakdown of trust? Is she not doing her job properly as chairperson of the committee on public service and administration? Of course she's doing a good job. She's pretty sharp, you know. I've seen her in action asking very probing questions of those who come before her.
Mm.
She wants full accountability about how our money is spent. But no. Doing an excellent job is not the thing. Breakdown in trust is very easy to translate. It means you voted against Zuma. It's got nothing to do with competency at your job. It's just, well, we don't like you, so you are fired. Lovely stuff. And meanwhile, where trust should really be broken, sweet nothing happens. I'm speaking about that fellow Duduzi Manana who viciously beat that woman in the nightclub. He admitted that he did it. He is the Deputy Minister of Higher Education. Wow. Deputy Minister of Higher Education. What a great example to our kids there.
Gee.
Still the Deputy Minister of Higher Education. No breakdown in trust to remove him. And the biggest shock of all, and of course it would really be funny if it wasn't so tragic, the ANC Women's League, in this so-called Women's Month, when everyone is loudly speaking about violence against women, gender violence, the Women's League said, no, we don't call for Duduzi Manana's removal because this is just a big political ploy. It's a big ploy. Hey, aunties, what are you smoking, eh? He seriously assaulted a woman.
True.
You should be standing with that woman, but no, you stand with the gundan, the perpetrator. That is absolutely shameful and so shocking. But in the animal farm we are living in, this wonderful country, we are beyond being shocked. We are just plain numb at all the outrageous things that are happening. And in this Women's Month, another vicious assault on a young woman. And the police is still looking for the perpetrator of this serious crime. Where is Grace Mugabe? No one knows. This Grace Mugabe has a large entourage. Lots of bodyguards and hangers-on and so on. And she stays at the poshest hotel in Johannesburg. But you know what? They can't locate her. You just want to laugh. Eh? They haven't arrested her, haven't brought her to court, nothing. The police said that the investigations are complete, but now they are waiting to see what will happen. Because this Grace Mugabe, her lawyers claim that she has diplomatic immunity. I'm sure you covered all of that. Now, that's a nice one, diplomatic immunity. You get diplomatic immunity. In other words, you can't be charged here in South Africa if you came here to do your government's work, Zimbabwe government's work, some diplomatic work. Then you are untouchable. It's, of course, unfair, but that's international law. Well, this Grace came to South Africa to get medical treatment for an injured foot. I wonder if she kicked someone in Zimbabwe. Anyway, her foot is not government business, so no diplomatic immunity for her. Correct? Correct? Well, don't bet on it. I'm sure our fellows at the top are working feverishly, very hard indeed, to see how they can get her off the hook. 52-year-old Grace beat the 20-year-old young lady, and of course 93-year-old President Mugabe is in the country, no doubt telling our government to beware of taking action against Grace, as she's going to be the next president of Zimbabwe. Anyway, media reports indicate that the young girl was offered a blank check to drop the charge, but she refused. That is so nice, eh? Blank check.
Yeah.
Blank check. Wow. Anyway, Grace has pots and pots of money. It's just been reported this week that she bought a 45 million rand mansion in the Lani suburb of Johannesburg, which is Sandhurst. So the young lady could easily have filled the blank check with any amount that she wanted to, 5 million or 10 million, and the check would not bounce. But she said no, and Gerinel, well, you may remember him, his nickname is the Pitbull. He finished Oscar Pistorius in court. Well, he is the lawyer for the young girl. It's all so exciting, eh? So exciting. So what do you think, dear listeners? Do you think this Grace Mugabe will get away? Ah, that's a very difficult one. But nice conversation topic over Dal Ghost today. Mm. Someone made quite a funny suggestion, Mola. Funny suggestion. Duduzi Manana assaulted the woman in a nightclub in Sandton. Grace Mugabe assaulted the young lady in a hotel in Sandton. So the whole matter can be settled very easily if Grace and Duduzi are put into a boxing ring in Sandton and slug it out over 10 rounds. Eh? I'm sure the event will be a sellout. Animal Farm. Some animals are more equal than others.
Yes, gee, so true. Now, moving on, speaking of that equality, the march by the right wing in the United States of America.
You know, ever since Donald Trump decided to become president of the United States, I learned a new expression, dog whistle.
Mm.
I did mention previously what this means. You know, there is a special whistle that lets out a very high frequency sound that human ears cannot hear, but dogs can. And so, obviously, when you blow it, your dog will respond.
Right.
And so, the term dog whistle is usually used to describe a speech where a person says something, but not directly. And those who are listening will pick up the hint buried in that speech. They will get the message and will respond to it. For example, some couldn't say openly and directly that all Muslims are bad people or that Islam is a bad religion. He can't say that. But he kept on saying that radical Islamic terrorism is a threat to America. He said this and other things over and over and over again. Ban Muslims from entering the United States. Check on the mosques, etc. The madrasas, check them. So, some people listening to him got the simple message. Muslims are bad. That's what they hear. The dog whistle. And so they respond, and so you've had attacks on mosques in the United States and against ordinary, innocent, law-abiding Muslims. The right-wing white racists, known as white supremacists, well, they picked up the hidden message, the coded message, and they acted. And his campaign slogan was, "Make America Great Again." Now, many took that as a dog whistle that actually meant, "Make America White Again."
Yeah.
White people must dominate. That was the message. So, for the white supremacists, this means white Christians. That's what it meant to them. So they are anti-Jew, anti-Muslim, anti-black. That is why the ultra-racists, the Ku Klux Klan, gave Donald Trump its full support when he was standing for president last year. Preserve white identity is the message they were getting from Donald Trump. And a few days ago, that racist march in the town of Charlottesville in the United States, well, the people opposed to the march also, opposed to these fascists also had their own march. And the two sides clashed. It was crazy, a huge and very disgraceful episode in the United States. And a car, as you know, driven by a 20-year-old white supremacist, plunged into the anti-racist crowd, killing one and injuring dozens. And everyone waited for the big guy to speak. And President Pagla addressed the nation and said that both sides are to blame. Well, to be honest, what else could he say? White racists voted for him to be president, so he couldn't possibly condemn them outright. And the country was, of course, shocked and outraged that he didn't condemn them. So 2 days later, he came back and said, yes, 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 I do condemn the white racists. But then he ended up by saying that both sides are to blame. He said it once again. And then he said, we Americans must preserve our history. Sure. Another dog whistle. History meaning the old ways when white people ruled the country. And the white racist thanked him for his speech. Anyway, the huge focus was on what the white racists were chanting as they marched. Absolutely horrible things they were chanting against Jews. Nazi slogans they were chanting. Blood and soil. And also they said, Jews won't replace us. So they were chanting this all along, anti-Semitic chants. Of course, such anti-Jew hate speech must be strongly condemned by everyone. This is plain racism, and very ugly also indeed. All forms of racism should be condemned. And this brings me to a very powerful essay that I came across this morning, written by Professor David Lloyd. He is the distinguished professor of English at the University of California, Riverside, and is a founding member of the U.S. campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. Let me read to you some extracts from his article. Do we have time, Molana?
Gigi, we have time.
I don't want to leave out most of the subject. It's quite long, so I'll read some most of it. The topic of the article is racial supremacy and the Zionist exception. U.S. politicians from Senators Marco Rubio and Orrin Hatch to Chuck Schumer and Ron Wyden have been outspoken in their condemnation of Saturday's Unite the Right march in Charlottesville and the vicious acts of terror that it spawned. Criticizing Donald Trump for his reluctant and temporizing comments, they condemn the hate and are rightly appalled by the white supremacist chants. Meanwhile, basically what he's saying is that all these U.S. Congressmen were condemning this march and also Donald Trump for not speaking out strongly. The article says, meanwhile, the same senators are united by their ardent support for a racist regime that is no less inspired by racial supremacy and an ideology that demands ethnic cleansing. All have signed on to a bill, a law that would protect the state of Israel by imposing civil and possibly criminal penalties on anyone who protests its ongoing violations of Palestinian rights, including illegal settlements and dispossession, by advocating for the boycott of its economic, academic, and cultural institutions. In doing so, these congressmen have placed protecting Israel and its racially discriminating policies above the rights of activists who are inspired by the same commitment to justice as the demonstrators who oppose the open display of racism and anti-Semitism in Charlottesville. The contradiction between condemning U.S. racism and support for the racist ideology of Zionism has become steadily more glaring. The ugly chants and intimidating violence of the fascist right have met with almost universal disgust, including naming the lethal ramming of non-violent protesters an act of terror. At the same time, Americans have had to confront the fact that white supremacy is an intrinsic, if shameful, element in their history and institutions whose consequences have yet to be overcome. The brief moment when the premature claim that the United States was post-racial has run its course, but the same awareness has yet to extend to the remarkably similar and equally consequential worldview of Zionism. American white supremacists express their fury at being replaced by an increasingly diverse population and speak of a demographic genocide. Meanwhile, the self-proclaimed Jewish state of Israel and its officials not only speak openly of the demographic threat or time bomb posed by the Palestinian population in Israel and in the territories that it illegally occupies. They develop policies to enact their fantasy of an Israel cleansed of all but a tiny minority of Palestinians. These measures include not only the demolition of Palestinian homes in the Negev or in East Jerusalem, but also laws like the citizenship and entry into Israel law, which prohibits Palestinians outside Israel from gaining citizenship or even permanent or temporary residence if they marry an Israeli citizen. This law, which denies the basic right to family unification to thousands of Palestinian families, was upheld by Israel's Supreme Court in 2006 and renewed in 2016. Even at the height of apartheid, the South African Supreme Court stopped at accepting a similarly framed law on the grounds that it would have adversely affected African social life. Likewise, a version of redlining, an old American practice that maintains segregated communities, is commonplace in Israel and protected by law. Adala, the Israeli human rights organization, maintains a database of some 50 laws like this that discriminate against Palestinians in Israel, constituting a system tantamount to, if not, as some well-informed observers claim, worse than apartheid. Right? Now, I don't want to go too much into this. It's a long article. Okay. It says that Zionism has become a toxic stain that contaminates whatever comes in contact with. It turns liberal media, journalists, and academics into the mouthpieces of repression and censorship. It spawns defamation and blacklists of scholars and activists in the name of anti-racism. It dons the mantle of democracy and liberalism to promote a supremacist ideology and racial state. It is time for consistency and to end the exception made for Zionist racial supremacy. In solidarity with those who protested fascism at Charlottesville and with those who continue to protest police killings, deportations, Islamophobic travel bans and homophobic laws, progressives across the board must condemn Zionism and cease to offer uncritical support of the state of Israel. Instead, they should stand with the activists who demand justice for Palestinians, even as they protest racism in the United States. It is no longer possible to serve the agenda of supremacism in one place and decry it at home. As progressive senators and an increasing number of former liberal Zionists have learned, the contradictions of doing so are unbearable and the political costs are insidious. So, what does it mean? I told you it's a powerful essay. I didn't read the whole thing. The bottom line is this. Professor David Lloyd says, how can U.S. politicians and so-called liberals strongly condemn the white racist groups in America and yet the very same groups support and protect the racist state of Israel? The word is hypocrisy or double standards.
Yes, that is so true. Speaking about hypocrisy, double standards, and, you know, in a way staying in that region, the latest on the war on terror.
You know, Maulana, I'm sick to death from hearing a scratched record that is stuck just in one place, a demented parrot with a limited vocabulary saying the same stupid things over and over again. And I'm referring to the repeated claim that there is terrorism in the world because of Islam and Muslims. Islam teaches Muslims to hate. Madrasas made them into religious fanatics. It's a twisted ideology. It is evil. Young people's minds are warped by Islamic teachings. They study it and become radicalized into committing violent acts. Killing machines, that's what they become, killing machines. Islam, the religion, is a danger to the world. You know, I hear this thing over and over and over again, right from the time from 9/11. We've been hearing this thing nonstop. And it's an absolute load of bull.
True.
That's what it is. Utter rubbish. Well, you know, I would say that, won't I? I would say that. I would defend Islam because I'm a Muslim and so I will not face the truth. And therefore, I would say that it's all nonsense. Well, dear listeners, the fact is that it's not just me saying this. It is the United Nations. Yes, the United Nations is saying that this is a load of bull. Here is an article from the British Independent newspaper. It says that young men who leave their homes to fight for terrorist groups in Syria mainly come from disadvantaged backgrounds have low levels of education and lack any basic understanding of the true meaning of jihad or even the Islamic faith, according to this report. A study from the United Nations Office of Counterterrorism found that despite claiming to protect Muslims, most of the returned fighters were novices in their religion. They were new, didn't know very much,
yes.
Nadan. And some did not know how to pray properly. The authors of the report said, which is based on many interviews that they did, they said that most saw their religion in terms of justice and injustice rather than in terms of piety and spirituality. They found that a typical fighter is most likely to make to be male, young, and disadvantaged economically, educationally, and in terms of the labor market. The report added, he is also more likely than not to come from marginalized background, both socially and politically. Most were unemployed or underemployed and or said that their life lacked meaning. Three quarters of those interviews reached Syria but subsequently decided to leave, while others were intercepted by authorities in their own country or stopped en route. Professor Hamid Al-Saad of Manchester Metropolitan University and terrorism expert Richard Barrett met most of the returnees in prison or under the watchful eye of security services. The majority interviewed fighters who attempted to join groups including ISIS, Al-Qaeda, affiliate Jabal al-Nusra, Jihadi, Ahrar al-Sham, came from large and dysfunctional families in deprived parts of cities where they were isolated from mainstream social, economic, and political activity. Religious belief seemed to have played a minimal role in the motivation of this sample. The report found, saying that economic factors had become more important as terrorist groups promised wages, homes, and even wives. So, there you are, ladies and gentlemen. Islam has nothing to do in motivating young people to go and fight in Syria or Iraq or in that whole region. Will this evidence stop the scratched record? Not at all.
True.
The racists, the bigots, the Islamophobes will continue spreading their hate.
Gee, that is unfortunate, really. The light at the end of the tunnel.
I got two very quick ones here for you, Maulana.
Gee.
One day, the zookeeper noticed that the monkey was reading two books.
Okay.
The Bible and Darwin's theory, the origin of the species. Well, this zookeeper was very surprised and he asked the monkey, why are you reading both those books? And the monkey answered, well, I just wanted to know if I was my brother's keeper or my keeper's brother. All right, here's a quick one here. Yeah, all right, sometimes old bullies can become very grumpy, very grumpy, get very moody all of a sudden. An elderly couple were driving across the south coast, and the woman, the old woman was driving when she got pulled over by a traffic cop. And the traffic cop said, ma'am, you know you were speeding, eh? And the woman couldn't hear very well at all. And she turned to the husband and said, what did he say? And the old man shouted at her and said, he says you were speeding. And the cop said, can I see your license, eh? And the woman turned to her husband and said, what did he say? And the old buddy was getting very fed up now.
Mm.
And he said to her, he wants to see your license. And the woman gave the officer a license. The cop then said, yeah, I see you from Harrisburg, eh? I spent some time there once and went on a blind date with the ugliest woman I've ever seen. And the woman turned to her husband and said, What did he say? And the old man shouted, he says that he thinks he knows you. Hey, the grumpy bullies, I tell you. That's all for now, brother.
JazakAllah, Uncle Abi. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala reward you once again for your time. And we hope to speak to you again next week, inshallah.
Inshallah, Habibi.
Inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.